Welcome to Terminal Talk, a podcast on mainframe and mainframe-related topics. I'm Frank.
And I am still Jeff Bisti.
Wow. And we have with us a special guest today to talk about Z Open Automation Utilities, the latest version. Anthony, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah. So I'm Anthony Giorgio. I'm the lead on ZOAU, or as Frank said, Z Open Automation Utilities. I'm a senior software engineer over here in Poughkeepsie, and I've been working on this for about 18 months or so now. It's been a lot of fun. We've been doing a lot of good stuff with the product and a lot of good stuff with the platform. So I can't wait to talk about it with you guys.
Well, and the last time we had somebody talk about ZOAU, it was that Fulton guy.
Yeah.
And that was like a long, long time ago. And there were some things about the product that worked and some things about the product, well, that were difficult to deal with. And well, and I assume now that you fixed all that, right?
Yeah, we finished rewriting all of Mike's code. No.
Oh, wow.
That's what I was looking for, Anthony. Thank you.
No, there's still plenty of his code. We've been filing off the rough edges, to steal one of Mike's phrases. And it's gotten honestly quite a bit better. So ZOAU has been, it's had a rather short lifespan, but it started off as kind of a bunch of just, I guess, toys and such that Mike was messing around in his spare time. Originally it was called MVS Utilities, and he just, really a core, main executable program that can run ZOS applications, and then a bunch of wrapper shell scripts around that to really kind of leverage that in interesting ways. And it was kind of neat. I was playing around with it from when it was new and just, trying to use it in some of my test cases when I was on ZCX, and it was kind of fun. And it was open sourced and all that. And then I think some people realized, hey, we might have something here. So the whole thing got brought back in as closed source, and they brought together a team and really kind of started productizing it, if you will. So kind of getting up to releasable standards and doing all the packaging and the licensing and such. So since about 2019 or so, it's been a real product. And you can get it for free if you want, or you can order it with optional sales and service and support options. And it's been quite popular. You should look at my support queue. We got a lot of tickets in for all the folks that are like, how do we do this and how do we do that? And just, we wanted to do X, and and also, can you make it, be nice and shiny as well? It's, it's nice to be on a popular product for once.
ZOAU always reminded me of like power tools for Windows back in the day. Like if you know what's going on, it kind of gives you the ability to do that stuff faster. But it's, it's not shiny, as you said, or glamorous. Do you think productizing ZOAU gives it an opportunity to kind of step forward and be more of its own thing?
Absolutely, because we have – ZOAU is kind of like a sort of a hacker development toy at first, and turning it into a real product really gets it into the customers that don't touch that stuff with a 10-foot pole. I kind of draw a comparison to the Z Open Tools project that's going on, which is fantastic and wonderful and has ports of all these great open source tools, but it is not available as a product yet. So if you are a hacker, developer, independent user, whatever, you want to install it and it's great. But if you have a production system and you need a formal support contract, that can be a sticking point. So ZOAU kind of fits the best of both worlds here. If you have literally no budget and just want to mess around with it, you can go download the packs for free, and that's it. No strings attached, nothing, just license agreement, move on. If you want support, we are more than happy to sell it to you, and you can get it individually or various bundling agreements. ZOAU comes with a couple of different products depending how you order it. It's available standalone, it's available via ZStack, it's been bundled with DBB in the past and a few other things. So there's various ways you can get a hold of it on your system. So and our customers run the whole range, small ISVs all the way up to big mainframe shops.
Well, and I see it. It's a pretty important component in things like our Ansible for ZOS, right? I really need to have ZOAU before I can do any of that automation.
Ansible is actually our sibling department, believe it or not. So ZOAU was just a little, you know, internal IBM politics here. You know, ZOAU has kind of moved around a little bit, you know, going to different sites and such. And the most recent group that I guess you can say adopted it as out in the West Coast, the Ansible team, because they realized they needed a lot of infrastructure work to accomplish what Ansible was going to do in order to really get access to a lot of the data set operations and job operations. And they could either write all the code themselves, or they could just say, you know what, we'll just take ZOAU on board and we'll just sponsor it and use our budget for that, because, hey, they already do 90% of what we want to do anyway, so it just makes sense to bring it into our department. And that's what they did back in, I don't know, 2020 or so. I think that's about when that happened. It was before I joined the team. And it's been there ever since. So I guess technically it's a West Coast project, if you will.
Yeah, but I think it's, you know, the thing for me about ZOAU is that I can start to connect in the USS space, or I guess we say ZUnix, ZOS Unix now.
Yes, USS is a forbidden acronym. ZOS Unix.
Yeah, ZOS Unix for now. That I can really start to connect things that have only been available kind of in the TSO space. Or through JCL, I can now really do stuff in ZOS Unix. And I think that's a really important component of ZOAU, is that I've really changed that connection in ZOS Unix, which is important because I think new users are going to be much more comfortable in that space than in TSO.
And that's where also all the automation is coming from. If you're looking to leverage an existing automation product, 99% of the time it's coming in through SSH. You know, that's just the way things are done now. Because all the authentication and authorization is all handled already. So if you can get an SSH connection to a server and you want to remote control it that way, that's great. So making all of these mainframe ZOS-specific capabilities available via USS, via, you know, that SSH connection, is really what ZOAU is all about. I know.
It's a habit.
Debbie Knoll is going to be very unhappy with me. She always polices our acronyms.
Yes, ZOS Unix.
Will Bash Shell and Python still be like the primary entry point for this?
Yeah, so at the current moment, we support, there's a shell interface, you know, mostly shell scripts and C utilities, and we offer a Python language pack, which is, at the current moment, essentially a wrapper around all of those. There's a shared library which makes those accessible. There's also, a different team provides a Go wrapper, I believe, or is it Node.js? I don't remember, but there's another team that provides these things. And really, if you can use a C shared library for another language, you can certainly do that. There was a Java language pack too that existed. That no longer is supported in the current release. There wasn't a whole lot of customer demand we had found for it, but we might bring that back possibly as an open source thing in the future. We don't know. But yeah, and you know, if there's other languages that show up, we could certainly consider adding them to the portfolio.
And that's what kind of makes it cool, is that, yes, we're kind of supporting Python these days because that's the language that's well known, or at least well used, around at least management of other platforms, and it allows us to easily be connected. But because of the way it's built, grafting ZOAU on other languages is not a arduous activity, right? Because it's most languages already have C connectors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can just load the shared library. Our current architecture is not, you know, the most performant in terms of how that's really used. You know, having Python call a shared library and calling a shell script that wraps a TSO command, while it can be effective, isn't always blazing fast.
So I always love the game of Mousetrap as well.
Yes. There's a variety of... Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not just a performance issue, right? I mean, there are some limitations associated with
nicely done
using TSO. That TSO connection has some some buffering limits too, right?
Yes, and also the fun part about TSO is essentially if you're wrapping those commands near screen scraping, and that is less than reliable, shall we say. You know, you end up with, and the TSO is not meant as a programming interface, you know, for better or for worse. And while you can use it for things, you end up in odd situations where a new error message appears in stream, and now you have to account for that, and your code gets more and more complicated. So we're slowly ripping that out and replacing those with proper API calls. Unfortunately, a lot of those API calls are only in assembler, which, you know, makes it kind of tricky to get to some of these things.
Oh, well, I have a course to recommend if anyone wants to learn assembler. I realize we've made it like, what, 10 minutes into this, and we haven't even like said what ZOAU does. We've just talked about how to use it. So can you give us just because we don't do things in order over here. Can you just give us like the high level overview of like what ZOAU is, why somebody would want to use it, and what kind of person it's for?
Sure. But just first of all, for the discount code for Jeff's course will be available in the show notes. And second of all,
let's get those numbers up.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. Anyway,
IBM.com/training.
So ZOAU is essentially a connector. It's an interface. It's a way of accessing a lot of, I guess, proprietary or traditional or classical mainframe services from ZOS Unix. So if you wanted to access things like data sets or jobs or operator commands or just all those things that you'd normally do with a green screen, ZOAU gives you a way to get those from your Unix shell prompt using a variety of utilities. There's, you know, about two or three dozen at this point. Some of those have existed in differing ways. You know, some of them, the existing user space shells and utilities, like you can copy from a data set using BinCP. That was enhanced, you know, many years ago to do that. But it's got a very well-defined interface where it works. You know, there's other things that customers might want us to do, and ZOAU were able to enhance it to kind of account for those sorts of things. You know, jobs as well. You know, you could submit a job from ZOS Unix. There's always been a submit command. But what if you want to print the DDs? You know, what if you want to get the output of that? What if you want to get the job status? It's a little more complicated to do that. And you can do all these things from SDSF, sure. But SDSF, because it's green screen, is not scriptable via an SSH connection unless you're going to jump through some, you know, horrendous hoops there with you know, layers and layers of screen scraping.
So horrendous hoops playing at Tubby's this week. Yeah. To support the local music scene.
Well, and screen scraping is really the wrong way to go anyway, right? That's we've learned a long time ago that doing things via screen scraping is not only slow, it is it opens yourself to problems when the screen changes, and that does happen from time to time. And now my interface no longer works.
We found some very interesting screen scraping issues. I'll give you an example. We have for our command DLS, it lists stuff in a data set. You know, it can list the data sets, it lists the members and all those kind of things. That's a non VSAM data set listing command. And that, you know, for better or for worse, uses screen scraping at the moment. You know, we have plans to rewrite it at some point in the future. We'll see how that goes. But we had a very interesting situation where one of our users created an ID that didn't have a TSO segment. And that threw off the output. So all of a sudden, it's like, hey, DLS no longer works anymore. You're getting error messages inside, you know, your output here. And that just, well, that's the problem with screen scraping. If you're not aware of it, you don't account for it, it just falls in its face. So so the proper APIs, you know, programming interfaces, we don't necessarily have to worry about that. And then you get notified when things change, which is great. You know, IBM kind of has a contract there with the customers that says, you know, everything will be – we promise that this is not going to change. If it does, we'll probably give you, you know, a decade worth of warning, which is wonderful for a product. You know, look at the whole JES 3 thing. You know, that took a very long time for that to finally, you know, be removed from the product, now only with the GA of ZOS 3.1. That was announced, you know, 10 years ago at this point almost. So I look to leverage that kind of stuff.
So without giving anything away, because we are I'm pointing at a calendar right now, and I'm also pointing at another part of the calendar that we are not in. Just want to make that abundantly clear. What kind of things could somebody who – okay, let me put it this way. somebody who dreams of Z open automation utilities, what things might show up in their dreams?
Well, and before we get there, I mean, you guys just came out with a 1.2.5 release, right?
Oh yeah, we've actually had a really good cadence. This team essentially had been reduced down to nothing for various reasons, and we've stood up a nice group starting last April, and ever since then we've been hitting about one release a quarter, which is fantastic because wow. It was there that when the 1.2 release came out back in 2020, that was kind of it for a while, and honestly, there's so much promise in this product, so it's nice to actually see new things coming out and new stuff being added. So
You really put the U in ZOAU.
Absolutely. It's not just me. I've got a great team in the Guadalajara office at IBM. They are fantastic. I could not do this by myself. There's just too much to do. So shout out to all of them for being wonderful. But in terms of 1.2.5, so this is going to be probably the last 1.2 release. We are looking towards a major 1.3 coming forward, sometime, in the near future. And that's going to hopefully really kind of improve some of our APIs and make things a lot cleaner and just make it, easier to work with. We're thinking about adding JSON support. That's been a big request for a lot of our customers. We don't like screen scraping, and our customers don't like it either. So if you have to screen scrape our output because it's not necessarily in the most well-defined format, that can be problematic. And JSON, honestly, IBM ZOS has really been going with that. We have a whole JSON parser infrastructure now that is out, and it's honestly pretty easy to use, surprisingly. Unlike a lot of the other traditional mainframe interfaces, this is a whole proper set of C bindings that we can use. So it's been pretty easy to bake into a lot of our C code. And it's even actually gotten a lot faster, I've been told, for 3.1. I was looking at the release notes. And there's been some performance improvements there. So looking forward to leverage that. We've also had a lot of customers asking about generation data group support. So that's something else that we're going to be looking at for the future. Honestly, I didn't know too much about them. I knew they existed, didn't know how they really work. So it's been kind of a fun rabbit hole to go down and find out, yet another interesting facility. How does this thing work? And why is it like nothing else in the entire world? And it's just...
GDGs are like the coolest thing. And like... That it's one of those things. I was putting together a course on intro to ZOS thing, and I'm like, okay, we cover GDGs in this chapter. I'm like, what's a GDG? Let me read up on this. I'm like, this is the coolest thing. Why doesn't the rest of the world have these? Like, the supporting those in ZOAU makes complete sense because I know that it's something that a lot of clients are using.
In terms of what's been coming out with our most recent release, we've made a bunch of tweaks to the OPERA command utility. That's actually surprisingly been one of our most popular or most commented on or most complained about. I guess it really depends on your perspective. But it's really handy because it lets you submit a console command from ZOS Unix. And you've always been able to do this. There's been a tools and toy program that's been out since the 90s. I think Bill Shane even wrote it. And it's just been this little unsupported piece of assembler that's just been out there for download. And that worked. But some people wanted it to be, a productized thing. So it got bolted into ZOAU. And the original one was an SDSF interface. And that worked great. SDSF provides the ability to do console commands. And there's a nice Rex interface for getting access to that. Turned out not all of our customers use SDSF, which that became kind of an issue because we were denying part of the product to them. So it was rewritten in Assembler plus C. And while it worked, it had some rough edges, shall we say. So we've been dutifully filing those down. Mm-hmm. ZOS consoles is a deeper rabbit hole than I ever thought could possibly exist. just trying to find out when the output of a command is done is like right. Solving the halting problem. There is no way. So I'm making up a lot of heuristics here, and we found, I think, a decent balance at this point. I have more tricks up my sleeve that I plan on for next year, and we'll see where this goes. But
I was going to say, how do you catch the output of the command? Because anyone can issue a command. That I don't want to say it's the easy part, but how do you catch the output of a console that's rolling by?
Lots of assembly. So there's we've borrowed some assembly code from I think it's the IDZ folks. I think it's the product that lets you manipulate jobs and stuff through the Eclipse interface. JMON, I believe, might be called as the product of the component.
Yeah, it is.
So it. And I've gotten much better at S390X assembly, I'll tell you that. My HLASM skills were not very strong when I started this project, but I'm learning. But there's really four pieces to it. There's console activation, submitting the command, polling for output, and then deactivating the console. And that's really the whole program loop for Opera Command at this point. Hmm. And really, the question is, how do you do the polling? Because some commands give you all of the response all at once, something like DIPL info. It's just, here is a single multi-line message, and that's it. So when you get your output, you're done. That's great. You have other commands, you know, JES, where they give you lots and lots of individual lines, and it's a little difficult to know when it's complete. So then it's a matter of, well, I guess I have to wait a certain amount of time. Well, how long do you wait? Well, that's dependent on your system load. So that's a little tricky at the moment. Although there are some messages that will give you an eye catcher at the end. So, you know, potentially, you know, maybe we could scan for that. I don't know. This is just something that we've been thinking about. If you possibly have a certain message ID, you'll know that your message is complete. But again, not all messages do that. So there's some that, you know, that the customer is just going to have to use their best guess, unfortunately. You know, it's, if we did it all over again, we would put a bit saying, yeah, this is the last one. But we didn't. And so, yeah, we have what we have, and we make the best of it.
Just do what the truckers do and say over.
Yeah. I wish, but you'd have to rewrite all the message things in the entire operating system, and some of those are last touched before I was born. So.
Actually, some of it. I mean, I did some work on the Python side with your stuff, and I ended up looking for, you know, if you look at some of the text, there were positional arguments that would tell you where you are in the message. We did some neat stuff. Actually, there was some code that that Steve Perva did that was kind of interesting in the Python space that did took the message, tried to figure out where the end of it was, and then created a dictionary that had all the components in it. I tried to play along that line, and you spent a lot of time in your manuals trying to figure this stuff out. So yeah, I know how difficult that can be. That's, you know, not assembler withstanding, right? Just kind of understanding, okay, well, this is a positional argument, and sometimes that positional argument is just the space. So, you know, figuring out all the different nuances, because there really wasn't a lot of structure. Back then, it was based on people's, you know, well, people can read and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, right? you literally had an operator staring at a glass or even a you know, a teletype. Just okay, the print is scrolling by. It's like what you wouldn't even think of parsing that. I mean, that only came later. But
I mean, everyone hates a movie that ends with "to be continued?" question mark.
I saw Back to the Future Part 1 probably about 30 times in my childhood, and I was extremely frustrated until I finally had the sequels. So I feel your pain.
There's a 4 coming out too, so, you know.
Oh, I hope it's as good as the Indiana Jones.
That's cold, Jeff.
Okay. And don't get me started on RoboCop.
There was only one of those. No.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. This is going to be a historical one. I'm waiting to hear this one. So you were going to make an important technical point, Anthony, and we ruined that for you. So could you do that now?
Well, I was just saying, I like Opera Command, and I think it's probably one of our more popular commands just because it lets you do – Python especially is really good at just text parsing. So if you, say, submit a command and then you just get the output back in a Python string, it's really easy to do stuff with it. And yeah, I know technically you're screen scraping again, but some of those messages have been baked in stone since the 60s, and they're not changing. So essentially, that is a programming interface. You know, I've heard horror stories about a message not being needed anymore, but being required for automation. So a new message had to be bolted onto the end of it saying, ignore old message. You know, this is the real content.
Starting now. Yeah.
So, because removing the old one would break everything.
But so the thing I like about that idea, right, is that if I have this out in Python and I make that open source, then I get a larger community of people who can go, and add, hey, this is my experience. Mm-hmm. And so you can modify that just enough so that everybody can use it. So, you know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on is that you have so much work to do and you can't do it yourself. And you have some people in Guadalajara that are doing some work, but even if we gave you 50 people or 100 people, there's so much work that needs to be done that, you know, you can't possibly do everything that needs to be done. And kind of connecting an open source community, I think, is going to be really valuable going forward.
Yeah, we have a samples repo that people contribute to when they write things. I know, you know, Frank, you know, you've been a top contributor there, so I got to get you a badge for that one of these days. But it's just nice to see people sharing ideas with each other. And we also have – there's a Discord server that's been set up by Steve Pervov and Sono, and we've had some interesting ZUAU discussions there as well. So maybe, Jeff, you can put a link to that in the show notes after this.
Absolutely. Is it five nines?
It's seven nines, not okay. Five nines.
Yep. But seven nines
I'll
give
merch, you. I'll send you the link to his – it's good to be on his Discord. There's like 750 people –
I think it's over 900 at this point. It keeps going
really?
Up. Yeah, it keeps growing.
Well, the webpage that I always go to is allthenines.com.
All the nines.
You should go there.
Yes, and he's got some interesting merch that he sells too. So, but we're not here to shill for 7nines.com.
Oh my!
We're going to get in trouble for this, aren't we?
I am going to edit a few things.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, the loosest episode ever. Hey, so the 1.2.5 fixes or improves
addresses
the opper.
It fixes all the bugs. No. It 1.2.5 is kind of the culmination of a lot of just bug fixing and general housekeeping and cleaning that we've been doing. There was just a lot of edge cases and things that we've been working on over the last 18 months, and a lot of customer tickets have come in that we've resolved them, which is great. Just a lot of, you know, weird Python issues or just kind of incompatibilities or, and ZOS is a lot of corner cases too. And there's so many ways you can set it up. There's no good like reference ZOS image, which is kind of one of the problems. So making sure you account for all of that is kind of a big deal. We've also added a lot of capabilities, like just in terms of like job listing, the JLS command has gotten a lot new fields. One of the big requested ones was essentially the program name that's running for that particular one. That's a new field that popped up. Just making sure that things are always consistent and. The quality is just a lot better. And if you compare the 1.2.0 with 1.2.5, I think you'll just be pleasantly not surprised that it just kind of works, which is great. You know, it's never fun to use a product and just have it fall over, you know, all the time in front of you. And we've just fixed crashes and memory leaks and, you know, hooking up code scanners to it and just really trying to iron the C out. And it's always fun looking at code and finding out, you know, gee, I don't think this person knew how C memory allocation worked. Oh God, we have to fix all of it. So, but we fixed most of that, which is good. So, But going forward, I'm kind of envisioning ZOEU as, you know, we can keep extending that bridge between the traditional ZOS software and, you know, the Unix space. I've been using ZOS ever since I was a new hire, and there's been a lot of times I've said, gee, you know, why don't we have X? And the shells and utilities team, you know, was always they were very strictly following POSIX for a while, and POSIX is fine, but it's also kind of mired in, you know, the 80s and 90s, and we're well beyond that now. So it's nice to have a product where if we get an idea or it's something that, you know, gee, wouldn't it be nice if we can just do that? Like we just shipped a pair of ASCII to EBCDIC conversion scripts. Just, hey, why not? You know, they were there. You know, they were written by some folks who kind of put them together, tested them, added messages, productized them, and now they work great. And they handle file tagging, and they handle checks to make sure you're not double converting. Just generally, like all the stuff you'd want from a pair of these things. But now it's a supported pair of just quality of life things. You know, it's like, oh, this thing is in the wrong encoding. Okay, one command, boom, done. You know, if you use icon V, it doesn't necessarily set the encoding on the file tag, and then, well, okay, now you've got two problems. So just all these little things that can make our lives easier. I don't know.
Well, you're not limiting your reach based on some sort of self-imposed limitation.
No, if there's code that I see that, you know, maybe somebody wrote that's in the product, you know, we have some code that does product registration, like when you're doing your software inventory. And I realized, gee, there's no utility interface for that. You know, what if we wrote a shell front end to that? Would that be useful? You know, maybe. If somebody wants to do something and you can only do it via assembly, well, why is there no, you know, shell interface? Well, nobody wrote one. Well, maybe we can write one. I mean, we have a lot of upskilling to do in terms of, you know, being able to write assembly interfaces for these things. But when we get the team to that point, I think there's a lot of cool stuff that we can wrap and make available to, you know, to the outside world in a more modern, user-friendly. I don't know what the adjective should be for that, but way.
Yeah, there you go. Consumable works. I don't like the word modern, but like consumable, user-friendly.
Because the shell is not modern. The shell has been a thing since, you know, the 1970s, so I wouldn't call that modern. It's just more easily consumed by other tools. It's difficult to, you know, work with a 3270 stream nowadays, and there isn't, you know, these gazillion open source projects that'll work with it. You're kind of limiting yourself, unfortunately. It's just the nature of the operating system. You know, 3270 was great for what it was at the time, but it's kind of a limiting factor now. So the more we can expose this stuff, the more we can make it consumable. I mean, ZOS has a lot of really great tech into it, but if you can't get access to that tech, it might as well not exist. So
now, as three Italian men here talking, I can't help but think I think about, like, you know, sometimes in a certain city, like the garbage collection sanitation might not be up to par, and somebody might think, like, well, can't somebody do it a better way? I'm going to start my own garbage company, and they might not wind up with the best outcomes. Are you ever concerned about upsetting the delicate balance of the way certain things are always done in ZOS?
I mean, yes and no.
Like dark corners of the hallways.
I mean, there is that, you know, that politics is always a part of the job here. And, you know, I remember reading in one of the IBM history books, you know, years ago that customers were able to know what site an IBM product was programmed at just from how it felt and how it was used. And and honestly, I can really feel that because I'm working for IBM Z software now, which is a very different kind of business than IBM, you know, ZOS. It's just the culture is different. Just the speed of doing things is different. Just the overhead is different because it's kind of a West Coast versus East Coast thing. You know, the Silicon Valley labs versus, you know, IBM Poughkeepsie. Neither one is necessarily better. But I find that not being in the operating system means that we can be more nimble. We can react to customer requests faster. And I find the expectations are a little different. Customers seem to be more tolerant, I guess, of our failings. You know, if we screw up, we just fix it in an APAR and ship it, and that's okay. As opposed to, well, you know, this will be in the next OS release that's 2 years out. And that's a long time to wait for stuff. And I find customers, you know, like they'll be excited about a new feature, like the dataset file system one. I know some customers want to play with that, but it's only available in ZOS 2.5 and above. So if you're a customer that always goes with the least common denominator, you have to wait until 2.4 goes out of service. And that's a long wait.
Yeah.
So sometimes having stuff in an add-on that can be very nimble, it makes it easier to consume and makes it easier to work with. So, you know, you can't rely on ZOAU being there, but if it is in there and you want stuff in it, we can be more flexible to get it there for you. So,
well, and I think that's to me the really important part, right? Is that because you guys are kind of putting these releases out so regularly now, it allows me to really grow a different set of automation, because every time, not only is the existing stuff getting better, but there's new opportunities, things to take advantage of. But one of the things though that I'm still waiting for is I need to get to the point where I never have to log on to TSO to manage the system. And I would say that that's true right now, probably about 90% of the time, but there's still that 10% where, I'm just gonna have to log on to TSO, do that 3270 thing. But we're getting closer and closer to being able to do pretty much everything from within ZOS Unix.
Nice.
See, I did it right that time.
Good job.
I think that's a laudable goal, but like everything else, you know, the closer you get, the farther away the goal is, because you start getting to those really, really niche kind of edge cases there. But getting most of it there would be great. I mean, I think there's a few gaps. I know the RACF stuff. I know, Frank, you've been working on that kind of on your projects there. That's kind of an area that would be nice too. And yeah, you can do a lot of RACF from RDefine. And we have some opera command stuff that plays with it, but it's not intuitive and it's not convenient unless you're a ZOS, you know, security administrator. But I can do, you know, most things at this point. Sometimes though, it is convenient just to hop in the ISPF and edit a file rather than copying it back and forth. I think between like the dataset file system, you know, being able to edit that stuff kind of natively, that's kind of a big step up, instead of having to shuffle data back and forth around. I think I would love to get to the point where, you know, you essentially don't need a 3270 interface at all. I mean, that would be, I think, the goal to strive for here, kind of the nirvana at the end of the tunnel.
So you mentioned that sometime in the future, and Jeff's showing a calendar, right? Not where we are now, but sometime in the in the near-ish future.
Let me just talk about some of my favorite numbering systems. There's this one, and then there's this one.
So the episode will come out before any major releases come up,
and I'm really curious to know how this episode is going to come out. I have a feeling that large portions of the spoken word will be replaced with smooth jazz. So if listeners are wondering what's up with that, that's we want to keep our jobs. So there's going to be some editing. Maybe at some point we'll do a Patreon. You can get the unedited version.
But
if you guys want to hear Frank unscripted, you know, you can get tickets at.
You can just show up to the cafeteria. He's there all day. But anyway, looking forward to that other time.
Yes, and you mentioned that there were a couple of big things that you. That you expect to be addressing or looking at. Are there any other
on the radar?
On the radar. Good. We'll use that. You mentioned, wouldn't it be cool if we had support for JSON? You mentioned GDGs, which I think is pretty awesome. Are there other things in the not too distant future that would be hitting that radar?
In the medium term, and this is still kind of nebulous, we've had, you know, customer complaints about how we handle lots and lots and lots of data set, you know, or data set members or data set entries. You know, we're because of our aforementioned mousetrap, thank you, Jeff, for the adjective. That was lovely.
Turn the handle.
You know, things like DLS, yes, DLS can be a little non-performant if you have, you know, a hideous amount there. So stuff like that, like we've considered leveraging maybe the catalog search interface rather than having to go through TSO and scraping things. And so stuff like that, I would like to see. I don't know when that will be. It depends on really how many folks they give me to play with. If I had all the money in the world, we could get it done by the end of next year. But I'd like to replace pretty much, you know, 90% of our shell scripts, or at least the core ones, with proper C utilities, and just kind of smooth that long code path. And if I had, you know, even more folks, we could make that code do double duty and then get it right into the Python code. And instead of having Python called out to the C library, just build it into a C extension. We have kind of a small preview of that in the 1.2.4 release. We have a ZIO extension. Right now it's read-only, but it lets you get access to things in a much more performant and much more interesting way. So growing that extension is one of my goals. You know, it's currently not, you know, in plan, but it's something I definitely like to do. And that would just, there really isn't a good IBM provided native way of accessing data sets from Python. I mean, ZOAU does it, but we do it kind of a roundabout sort of hokey way at the moment where, yes, it works. Does it work well? Kinda. Could it be better? Absolutely. I'd love to just be able to really leverage those LE dataset APIs in a Python extension and then just have, you know, amazing speed with, you know, really huge data set members with lots of, you know, just all the intricacies. We're not there yet, but I'd like to be one day.
Something along the way, Zfile works then, or?
Zfile works? Yeah, or Fireworks?
Zfile? Have you played with Zfile?
No. I have not.
Yeah, you may want to check that out.
Is that the PyZfile Python library thing? Because I've heard of that. Okay, yes, I know of that one. Yes.
Yeah. So they seem to have done some of that work, but normally I say we're coming to the bottom of the hour. I have no idea whether this recording is 15 minutes long or 45 minutes long.
It's going to be 5 minutes of talking and 45 minutes of smooth jazz.
the uncut version will result us in having talking twos from executives. So we're gonna put that behind the paywall.
We'll have to do something special for that. But in the meantime, we've hit a lot of topics.
We sure have.
Some of them actually made it on air. So I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you, Anthony, for dealing with us for the last however many minutes we make it to the recording. We really appreciate not just ZOAU and the work that you're doing, but the fact that you came on and subjected yourself
It was delightful. A long time listener, you know, infrequent guest. So
says a lot about your character.
That's right.
I'm just waiting for you guys to say don't code like my brother.
Actually, Jeff finds the whole car talk thing very insulting. So we try not to bring it up.
Not insulting. I just don't listen to him.
Oh, you're missing out. So.
So
I don't know. I hear certain people fall asleep even when they're on the show, and I've yet to do that here. So,
well, you know, men of a certain age.
Yeah.
See, he's not there yet, Anthony. It's not like me. So,
just start talking about APL, and then you'll have him asleep in minutes.
Well, at least that had the funky keyboard. Talk about that for hours.
I love APL still. Still, my native computer language. So,
a programming language.
Yes. So, at some point, Jeff will figure out where to cut this off. And in the meantime, I can say, old man Charlie, run us out.
You've been listening to Terminal Talk with Frank and Jeff. For questions or comments, or if you have a topic you'd like to see covered on a future episode, direct all correspondence to contact@terminaltalk.net. That's contact@terminaltalk.net. Until the next time, I'm Charlie Lawrence, signing off.